Wow, that's a new one. I just hit the car ceiling with the microphone. Just like punched the ceiling of the car with the microphone. This is a problem I bet a lot of podcasts do not have. Welcome, everyone. On our way to the airport. This is workshop number 8. Will be this evening. I think 8? Yes, 8. I'm on a little bit of painkillers, so don't mind me. If I'm a little scattered or slow, or it seems like it's making my voice a little funny, but also I'm like, but I also had like oral surgery, so who knows? Who knows what the real culprit is there, right? Welcome. I had this thought the other night, and I was like, well, I'm glad I do a podcast, because I started talking about this to Poon Master Flex, and she was like, you're getting too cosmic with all this. And I was like, okay. But I think I brought it back around by the end. I think by the end I was like, she was like, okay, that's not that cosmic. But it starts cosmic. I tell you that to warn you that this starts kind of cosmic, but hang with me for 2 more sentences. Don't just yell into your car, Peter, you're getting too cosmic. Isn't the First Lady like the weirdest thing in the world? And here's why I think the First Lady is so weird. Like, it's weird that we have a First Lady. And it's also weird that we sort of decide whether or not a First Lady is a good one. Because it's not like you really apply for the job of First Lady. You kind of just get it, right? Because your husband gets the job. Which is where I'm starting off with, like, why this is so weird to me. What other job do you get where they're like, not only does your wife, like, get a job, and by the way, I'm saying First Lady, wife, because that's what it's been every time up until now. But all of this applies exactly to, you know, the first gentleman? Is that what we call him? Ladies and gentlemen, right? The first gentleman? That would be so amazing. I would be happy to be the first gentleman, by the way. The first gentleman. What other job, though, do you get? Like, your spouse gets a job. Poon Master Flex comes home and she's like, I got a job. And that sort of comes with a gig for me. You know what I mean? It comes with like a thing that it's like, well, guess what? Now you're doing this. And it's weird from that angle, right? Because like, what other gig is like that? What? And not only that, but like most other gigs, if Poon Master Flex got a job and then I started working there 2 months later, directly with her a lot of the time, I feel like people would say, like, that's nepotism. That's wrong. That's bad. But when it comes to the First Lady, it's fine. Now, I understand, though, there's an extent to which it does make sense. And here's why. All right, let's say I became the president. God forbid. It's not like Poon Master Flex could keep going to work. I mean, and, you know, we could say, like, oh, the First Lady could keep going to work. I think, what was Michelle Obama, like a lawyer or something? I feel like she was a lawyer, but I don't know. She can't keep going to work. And here's why. You could say, like, I'm willing to take the risk. I'm the first gentleman. I'm willing to take the risk. I'll just keep going 9 to 5 in it at the library. Like, why should this change anything? But here's the difference, is if I decided to do that, that's also making a decision for everyone who works around me or comes into the building to accept an increased level of personal risk, right? Because, like, if, I don't know, people come in and try to kidnap me or kill me or something to get at the president, which seems like something that, you know, is not off the table, especially if I was, like, I had a regular schedule, you know, every Thursday night, the first gentleman's at the library working. I mean, it makes it pretty easy for people. They could see if my fucking car's in the parking lot. And the Secret Service could be there, they could protect me, whatever. But it's assuming a level of risk for everyone who's not me as well, right? It's like, this kid just ran across the highway, four lanes of traffic. That was crazy. It's assuming a level of risk for everyone. So I get it, because the First Lady can't just decide to keep working, really. It's not really up to the First Lady. So in one way, you're like, I guess it makes sense. I should have looked up. I don't know. Does the First Lady get paid? I think the First Lady probably should get paid, right? She's got to do stuff. But then, like, what are the job requirements exactly? You're married to the president. The end. Wasn't there a president? Was there a president movie where the president was, like, married to a lady but was secretly gay? Or was it that he was unmarried and got secretly married? I feel like there's like a rom-com kind of like this. Possibly with Kevin Kline in it. Anyway. But it's just, it's like such a weird phenomenon, the whole First Lady thing. I think it's weird too, because it's sort of like, it's weird right now because we've seen the difference between like a Michelle Obama and a whichever Trump lady is the Melania? Is that the current wife of Donald Trump? You know what? I pay so little attention to this. I'm pretty sure that's who it is. I think there's like a Tiffany. I think that's a daughter. Ivanka, is that the old ex-wife? There's like a kid named Hunter or some bullshit like that. I don't really know. Baron? Eric? I don't know. I don't care. The point being, it's weird that we sort of like judge the merits of the different first ladies to me, because I'm like, I mean, they're all kind of, they're not necessarily there by choice. You know? I mean, I would be a little pissy if I was put into a job and then everyone was kind of like judging my performance on the job. You know, when I was like, I didn't actually apply for this job. I just kind of am in the job. They're just like, hey, congratulations. Now you're the first gentleman. I'd be like, I guess I knew this was coming. But, you know, it's got to be weird too, because like your spouse becomes the president. But the whole time leading up to that, you know, your life's kind of on hold. But then you may just have to go, you know, if Barack Obama had not been the president, I would think that they would both just have to go back to doing jobs, right? Like Michelle Obama would probably go back to work. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how that works. I think it's weirder in like modern times also. Like back in the day, I guess it's not that surprising. Just because women in the workplace was a different thing, but now it seems weird. Because it's like, oh yeah, I guess that doesn't, you know, this doesn't work as well. It's interesting. So yeah, what would I do? I wonder though, like, what would I do if I was the first gentleman? Like, what would be my campaigns? And I thought about this in thinking about first ladies, because I was like, what do first ladies, I mean, they do stuff, they always sort of have their thing. You know, like, I think the Bush first ladies were all about literacy stuff, I seem to recall. You know, for more or less, I guess. They're like, my son didn't read, so, and look what happened. Read. I think Michelle Obama was kind of like some healthy lifestyle stuff, and also I feel like there was some stuff about rights for people like immigrants or refugees or something. I recall something about her holding up giant note cards that said something or something. I don't know. Here's something that I think is kind of weird about like the first lady too. Or as first gentleman, I'd feel weird about this. Because it's like, the first lady is kind of telling us stuff like, oh, everyone should read and let's not bomb this country and stuff like that. And I'm like, maybe rather than talking to Pete, in, you know, Colorado about this nonsense, who, Pete, who can't really do a lot about this, maybe talk to your husband about it. I feel like your husband is uniquely poised to make a difference in this world. If that's what you're looking for, I don't know. Seems like your husband might be the ideal go-to guy when it comes to this sort of thing. Just a thought. So I feel like, you know, it's kind of tough to do something. I would want to do something that helps the world, but not in a traditional political way, I guess, because I just feel like that's I don't know. I feel like that would be my wife's thing. I'd be like, well, that's kind of what she's doing, right? So let me come at it from a different angle. And maybe what I would do is like all these sort of etiquette things that I wish people would pay more attention to. Maybe those would be my campaigns. I can't tell you how many escalators I've been on in the last 2 months. I mean, a lot. And, you know, force. There are a couple situations in my travels on each end where you have to just be on an escalator. Like, you just have to. Oh my god, I'm seeing a definite cow corpses in an open truck. And it's labeled inedible. Well, I guess that's good if I'm not going to be eating those. I wonder where those are going exactly. Like, where do you transport a bunch of inedible cows' bodies? Ugh. And why? What are you transporting them for? Wouldn't they just continue to be inedible wherever the hell they were? I don't feel like driving them in an open-top truck in the sun is going to make them any more or less edible, but what do I know? So, like, escalator, right? Hey, stand on the right, walk on the left. This applies to moving sidewalks, this applies to escalators, this applies to everything. And it's just like, don't get on there, set your bag on one side, and you stand on the other side so you block the entire fucking thing. It's like, I wish the whole world, I just want this, like, I need to come up with a clever way to say this. Maybe listeners can help me with this. But basically, it's like my campaign for everything in the world is like, you know, stand right, walk left. And more to the point, the slogan is something like, hey, it's none of your fucking business how fast someone else is going or may need to go. You just do your thing. But if you're doing your thing, don't block somebody else from doing their thing. Like, just move off to the side. It's like how I feel about driving. There's nothing in it to stay in the left lane and prevent someone from going blowing by you at 110 miles an hour. You know what I mean? It's like, hey, if that's what they're going to do, I don't think that's a great idea. But I think it's not to your benefit to, you know, sacrifice, be like, I'm going to just plant myself right here, and I'm going fast enough. I had this friend back in the day who used to drive like that. He was not like a particularly swift driver or attentive driver, and he always planted himself in the left lane. And people would get up. He always got so mad because he'd be like, everyone gets right up on my ass. And I'm like, yeah, it's because you're like blocking them. And he'd be like, well, I'm going 85 in the 75. And I'm like, so fucking what? Like, just let everyone go by you. Who cares? You don't get to decide. That's the thing. You don't get to decide for the world how fast the world should move or like in what way. Just like move over. Let them do whatever crazy shit they're going to do. And just move on with your life. You know, let go. Maybe that's it. Like, stop trying to control other people and let go. I don't know. There's something here. And that would be my whole thing is, like, first gentleman. Just let go of some shit. Just, like, maybe kind of let things happen. Yeah, I don't know what else I would do as, like, the first gentleman. I don't have, like, a strong... I mean, I have passions for some charities and stuff, but it's like, well, what am I going to do? Like, give them money or go to their fundraiser? I feel like as the first gentleman, maybe you'd have an advantage over the first ladies because you're the first one. You know what I mean? So, like, me going to talk to groups could be more of a draw than some of the first ladies. I think Michelle Obama's a draw, but I don't know about other first ladies so much. So, like, maybe you'd have a little advantage there. Like, I could go talk to, I don't know. I don't know who I would talk to. Like, who would be like, what does this guy have to say about da-da-da-da? I feel like they ask the first lady, too, a lot of questions about, like, the president's policies and plans and ideas. And I'm sort of like, well, what do you feel like? You don't have fucking access to ask this guy questions? Like, no one's asked him about foreign policy before? I feel like he's been asked about this before. I don't know, ask him. That's his policy, not mine. Oh, how great would it be as the first gentleman to then run against your wife for president? That would be the best. It'd be so weird. Be like, I don't know, I just got tired of fucking asking them all the time. Or, you know, I want it to be about me, goddammit. How weird would that be, too, to go from being the president to being the first lady? Like, I guess a reverse, you know, alternate universe Clinton situation. I was really looking forward to Bill Clinton as the first gentleman, by the way. I was like, it's kind of the guy I want doing that. He's not the biggest rule follower. You know, like, some listeners may not remember this, but, like, he sort of took off and went for a jog to a McDonald's, like, when he was president. Or at least this is the sort of rumor, maybe somewhat apocryphal. I don't know. I like apocryphal because it's like a fancy way of saying total bullshit. But I don't know if that really happened or not, but that's kind of like the apocryphal tale. So I can imagine as, like, first gentleman, he would be doing something. And I don't, it'd just be weird, right? It's got to be fucking weird to move back into the White House after moving out. Like, it's got to be weird to move in there in the first place, especially as an adult. Because you're like, I'm like in my 40s or 50s, and I know I'm moving into this house for like 4 years and then moving back out. I wonder how much ability they have to, like, redo rooms and stuff like that. Because it seems like, I mean, what are you going to do? I know they have, like, the Lincoln bedroom, right? Which, is that where he slept or where he died? What is that? Because I don't know if it's, like, people are excited about the Lincoln bedroom, but I'm like, I mean, is that, that's where he died? That's where, like, the doctors were, like, prodding his brain to try and get this bullet out? That doesn't seem like a restful place to me. You know, it's not, I don't know, it doesn't sound great. Doesn't sound great at all. So, first gentleman, there you go. I mean, I'm up for it. I am up for it. It's kind of weird, too. I think I was thinking about first lady stuff because I was like, when are we going to get a single president? A president who's not married? And I was trying, I'm sure that we've had presidents who don't have children, but I'm sort of like, they're always like, despite, you know, the changes we're looking towards, it's like, I still don't feel like we've had anyone close who's not sort of family oriented in some level, and also not, you know, an outspoken atheist. I don't necessarily mean like an obnoxious atheist, or not even atheist, but like is sort of, you know, I don't know. I like some of the Taoist principles. Those seem to inform my life in a way that makes sense. But that's about it. I don't attend church. I have no desire to. Like, where is that person? And why haven't we gotten that yet? And so I think I was just thinking about that because it was like, yeah, it'd be weird if we did. How different would a presidency be without a first lady, I guess is my question. I don't know if it would be that different. Or first gentleman. You know what I mean? If Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton had gotten divorced and she was running for president, I don't know if that would have hurt her. I doubt it. I don't I don't know if it would have made a difference, but it wouldn't have made a difference in my opinion. I'd be like, I mean, I'd probably divorce someone who cheated on me. So there you go. I'd probably divorce somebody who cheated on me. I might wait until they were done being president, depending on how pissed I was. Well, how great would that have been, though? A divorce proceeding going on for the president? I mean, what the fuck? I'm still not totally sure why she didn't. You know, it's totally personal. I'm not expecting an answer or anything. I just, you know. Just seems like you would. I just feel like that's one of those. Maybe it's not a no-go for her, but it's a no-go for me. It's like, I don't know, when someone cheats on you, like, how can you trust them again? How can you live like a normal relationship life with them anymore? That just seems really difficult and undesirable to me. Anyway, so I had my other oral surgery. It hurts. My face hurts. My dad used to tell this joke. There's a time I fell when I was snowboarding, and I fell right on my face. I, like, went over a jump, and I was kind of in the air when I realized, like, I don't know how to land on a skis, but I don't know how to land on a snowboards from a jump. I, you know, caught an edge and just face flopped right on my fucking face. So my face was all bruised up and shit. To the point where I think my teacher in school kind of asked about it, and I was like, I knew what she was getting at. I was like, no, I have not been hit in the face. First of all, lady, my parents are college educated. If they're going to abuse me, they're going to abuse my body where you're not likely to see it. Like the kid who came into school and made a big stir because he had like an entire shoe print on his back because his mom hit him with a shoe. That lady was smart. In as much as knowing how to get away with abusing your child. Let's make that a very qualified... I'm going to put that in huge air quotes. That lady was smart. And you know what I mean now. But I had this, you know, bruised up face. And for a couple weeks, every time my dad saw me, he'd be like, does your face hurt? You know, and the first time I said no. And then he said, oh, it's killing me. And I was like, oh, good one. Real good one, buddy. And, you know, what's funny about jokes like that is you don't know, when you're young, you don't know how to react to that shit. Because you're like, does your face hurt? And then after the first time or two, you're obviously you know what's coming. You know what I mean? And it's like, he would say, does your face hurt? And then I'd be like, no. Because I just didn't know what else to say and sort of wanted him to just tell the fucking joke. I'm not going to laugh because I don't think it's funny anymore. But also, I mean, it's not that great of a joke. And if I know that that's what's coming, then it totally kills the joke, right? Like when you don't know that's coming, you're like, okay, I gotcha. That's a good one. But the third or fourth time the same person tells it to you related to the same face injury, you're like, all right, fuck face. I mean, can I just say yes or no? And, you know, you might try saying yes, but then it's easy. It's just like, yeah, it's killing me too. And you're like, fuck. Fuck, fuck, fuck. You're totally trapped. So I wish that, If I could go back in time, you know, the way I think I'd address that is does your face hurt? And I'd be like, it's very painful. Yeah, thanks for asking. Thanks for your concern. Just pretend with all my might that I thought he was being genuine. Like, does your face hurt? And I was like, actually, I wanted to talk to you about that because I'm concerned there may be actually some serious damage going on here. Because, boy... does your face hurt? Boy, does it. Woohoo, doctor. Dr. Dirk. So does my face hurt? It's killing me. And it is killing me. I went in. went in the afternoon this time. They did the surgery. I talked to the lady who works there. So this is something that's interesting. In the workshop, you know, we've talked before. I talked with Tom before about head and heart authority. So when you're telling a story, one of the things you got to do is establish your authority. So if I'm the narrator, establishing my authority means basically hooking the reader into thinking that I either know something about something, or, and that's head authority, right? So if I said something about, you know, if I'm telling a story about working at an auto shop, and I'm telling you some little tricks that people don't really know, for like, you know, I don't know, changing the oil on a 1985 Pontiac, the thing you gotta know is blah blah blah. Then you're like, okay, this person knows what they're talking about. And when you establish a head authority like that, a reader will think this person knows what they're talking about. And then sort of subconsciously, they transfer that to everything else you're saying. So they believe you about, they're not questioning what happened in the story. They're not questioning, like, is this person telling me the truth, or do they really know what's going on, or whatever. You establish head authority that way, and then the reader kind of automatically assumes that once you've established that authority, that you know what you're talking about. Tom would say, you know, once you've established your authority, you can do anything. You can say anything. You can get away with anything. It's just about people believing you. Heart authority is a little different. Heart authority is something you get not with a body of knowledge, but with a sort of a common way to do this is to have a character say something or admit to something out loud that people would never admit to. So if I, you know, what would be a quick example? You know, if I admitted something like, my child died, and in a way I was very relieved by that, because I was not a good parent, and I was completely failing as a parent, and as sad as it was when my child died, I felt a relief because I thought this kid was gonna, you know, was gonna grow up and have a miserable life because of me, and now that's not gonna happen. You can say something that's, like, fucked up, like that. You could admit to something about yourself. You could say something. Basically, you say something, you know, you admit a love that dare not speak its name. You say something that would make people think, again, this person's demonstrated a sort of bravery and willingness to say something that the average person wouldn't say. And so that buys you a level of authority as well, because then they're like, okay, well, this person is shooting straight, is kind of where you get with the head authority or the heart authority a little bit. So establishing the authority, right? One of the things about head authority is that, like, with the internet kind of coming on board and proliferating, head authority is a little tougher to do. Because it's tougher to kind of come across a body of knowledge that you know really deeply that other people couldn't just Google and find out. You know what I'm saying? It's hard for me to talk about something on such a deep level, but in such a sort of minimal and quick way that doesn't just sound like, well, I read a Wikipedia article on, you know, what have you, on house cleaning tips. And so now I know all these house cleaning tips, but I mean, you could have just looked them up. It's not that tough. Once upon a time, this was like head authority, right? You could do this. Or like, for me to know how a certain gun works, right, would be more interesting and more head authority. And now it's not as much to be like, the pin strikes the plate or whatever, and so on and so forth. It's not as impressive to anyone. So, you know, it makes it tougher, and one of the things that Chuck talked about was, and he's talked about this forever, which is, like, I like to talk to people on the airplane. Like, I don't put on headphones and stuff like this. I talk to people on the plane because they're kind of trapped with you for a little while. And he's like, that's where you can get really good head authority stuff. Because everybody knows something. You know what I mean? Everybody's got a job or has had an experience where they can tell you something. And you can kind of, like, take their experience and find the details in it. It's like how I feel about poop stories. Everyone's got a poop story. All these poop stories kind of have their individual little details. And kind of like, once you can get someone rolling on a poop story, you can get them to tell you their poop story, right? Once you can get someone to start rolling on head authority stuff, you can kind of mine their experience a little bit. And I'm very tempted in the workshop to ask this question about head authority and mining for that, because I'm sort of like, I'm hesitant to ask because it sounds manipulative. But also I'm like, do you have any like sort of techniques or opening lines that you find get people to talk about their head? Like, how do you get people to talk about that stuff? Because I'm not great at the small talk and I'm not great at chatting people up. And I feel like somehow they're going to know that's what I'm trying to do, right? That I'm trying to get to their head authority, even though they've never heard of this or whatever. But I wonder if there's, like, techniques that he's used. Like, well, I share something that I know, and then they share something, you know? That sort of spurs them to do that. Like, maybe you've got to, like, establish authority in the conversation as well. Or maybe you've got to establish that there's, like, low stakes, like, hey, I'm just an anonymous stranger that you're not going to see again, so you might as well tell me your deepest, darkest secret. Like, I don't know. I really want to ask this question in the workshop, but I don't want to come off as a weird creep. But maybe I should just do it anyway and just be like, oh, fuck it. Like, who cares? So anyway, I got some head authority stuff, though, at the thing. So I go to my appointment. You know, I pay. It was funny because it was like $740 and no cents. And as soon as she said, and 0 cents, and she said it sincerely, but I really had wished it had been like, and 43 cents or something, because I was totally prepared to be like, hold on, you said this was going to be $740. No one said anything about a fucking 43 cents. And I thought about making the joke about the $40, but then I was like, eh, that's probably, people probably really do quibble over that. Which, like, I'm not saying $40 is nothing, but I'm saying, like, I've spent $1,400 there in 2 months. So $40 is not, you know. And this is not a brag. This is a lament. Anyway. So then I go and I'm there, but, you know, the doctor is doing something else. So I kind of just have to sit there with the assistant lady, the other dentist lady, the assistant person. And you know, she keeps giving me the stuff to numb my gums so they can inject me with stuff to really numb shit. Whatever they use to numb your mouth when they do stuff, that shit works, man. Like, you can't feel shit. I couldn't even tell where my tongue was the whole time. But, I think we had to do 3 or 4 rounds of that, because it doesn't last very long. It's like the topical gel, they put this gel on so basically you don't feel them inserting a needle into the roof of your mouth, which, you know, is appreciated by this patient to the extreme. But it doesn't last long, and you gotta get like this perfect sort of perfect ratio. This fucking guy passed me up and then like slowed way down, and it's like very annoying. I hate when people do this shit. So you gotta get the perfect time, because sometimes you'll go to the dentist, they put the gel on, and then they wait like 30 seconds. Here's the key. You don't want the dentist sitting right there waiting. You want them to do the gel, to put it on the swab, to put that in your mouth, and then walk away. And then you get some shit. Then they come back, right? So that's kind of what you want to have happen. But if they're sitting right there, they get impatient and they just fucking slather it on and then just go for it. And you're like, no. It's kind of like making a peanut butter bagel. If you put the peanut butter on immediately after toasting your bagel, it's just going to melt. And then it's a mess. It's no good. It's not convenient. It's a horrible breakfast. It's a breakfast unfit for a dog, even though a dog would fucking love that. But then if you put the peanut butter on too late, then the bagel has been toasted. It's hard. It's crusty. It's no good. You got to do it at the right time. And there's not a small window, but there is a window. You've got to be conscious of the fact that you're working within a window. It's not an everlasting, you know, wrinkle in time. So we had to do this 4 or 5 times. So we're chatting the whole time. And the lady's in, doing her prerequisites for dental school. And so she's telling me about some of the shit, you know, about the different things they use and the different, because I was asking about the procedures they do and like the dental implants, which she was like, those are actually not that bad. I mean, the surgery is pretty quick and it's pretty simple. Like, she gets in there, she drills a hole for a post, they put the post in, and then they, you know, whatever. And we were talking about crowns and stuff, and she was like, well, sometimes people will go a super long time on, you know, you. So when you get a crown, they shave your tooth down to like basically a knob that then the crown is cemented to, right? And so what people will do is they get a temporary crown for like a couple weeks or something while the permanent crown is sort of made. And these permanent crowns are made in like a lab basically, or a, you know, production facility, but they're like handmade basically. Like, they kind of make them and then they hand carve parts of it. They hand paint a lot of them to match people's tooth color and stuff like that. I mean, they put a lot of fucking work into these things, which I get, because it's like, oh yeah, whatever. And, you know, she was talking about striations, so you have lines in your teeth, right, because of how they've worn or color wise or whatever. And so, like, if someone has, let's say, a band of color that's going from across their two front teeth and they're getting a front tooth replaced, you know, they want the band to continue across both teeth. And you're like, okay, like, I'd never thought about that, but that makes sense. And she was telling me how, like, gold, you know, is popular amongst older dentists, like, they just like it, but now a lot of them use something like zirconia, I think it's called, and it's like this composite that basically lasts forever, and it's awesome. But, you know, they put it, they like make the crown, they put it in this big rock tumbler, they do all this shit. And then she was telling me also that, so she's telling me these temporary crowns, people will sometimes wear them. They just had someone in who had worn hers for like 3 years, because basically, you know, crowns are expensive. She couldn't pay for it, so she went 3 years on her temporary crown. And she was telling me this because she's like, I have, you know, teeth at home that I've made, because a lot of times people don't come in, you know, she's like, a lot of times people don't come in for them, and so we just usually throw them out. I mean, we can recycle the material. And I was like, well, that's probably not where the value of the crown is, right? It's the labor. And she's like, yeah, totally. So the material's really not that expensive. But, you know, she's like, I got a bunch of teeth at home because oh my God. You know, when these trucks make these turns and they're like, I can only make the turn if I make this extremely wide turn. And you're just like, who gave you a license, sir? So she's got a bunch of these teeth at home. You know, that she's like, I made these, so whatever. And then she made her dad's teeth. Her dad had like a couple crowns and then like a fake tooth or something like that. So she's like, my work is in his mouth. And I'm always like, smile, show people, you know, show people how good I am. And he's like embarrassed about it. And then she was telling me too that what they can do is they can kind of do these like you know, designs on the teeth. So let's say I got a back tooth. She was saying, like, you know, we did one when I was there that was like a bulldog. Someone was like, I want a bulldog on my teeth, my tooth. And they had to confirm with this person, like, you mean like a bulldog, like a this? And they're like, yeah, totally. Like, they're a fan of, I don't know, Georgia or whatever. And they're like, put a bulldog on there. And they're like, all right. So they'll, like, draw a bulldog on there, basically. And it's, like, a permanent part of your tooth. Which I was like, that's pretty fucking amazing. And she's like, yeah, the person I work with had been there, like, 15 years. So she'd seen everything. She's like, I've done, you know, mascots. I've done clovers. I've done, like, anniversary dates. Which I was like, that's amazing. Because think about, you get your anniversary date on your tooth, and then, like, you get divorced. This is, like, to me, I'd rather have a tattoo that had someone's name than have a tooth that had our anniversary date on it, because I'd be like, God damn it. Because you just know that's in there. And, you know, if it's a back tooth, probably no one's going to see it, but every time you go to the dentist, they're like, what the fuck is this, you know? And you're like, oh, it's my anniversary date. And you're like, and we're divorced. You know, I made a real good decision, huh? So anyway, some head authority stuff there, right? Some stuff like that I guess the average person wouldn't know or think about. So that was good. I mean, and it kind of follows the same ideas of getting that stuff on the plane, right? It's kind of me and this lady, we're just trapped in this room together. Not trapped. I mean, it's not like, that makes it sound like she was unpleasant or something. I just mean, we're not going anywhere. We got nowhere to go. And, you know, she's interested. This is the thing, is like, she's in dental school and was very interested to talk about the stuff she was learning and the stuff she did in dental school, which I think made the conversation really easy. Because I just had to ask about it, and then she would tell me a lot about it. You know what I mean? I didn't have to push. I didn't have to ask a lot of questions. But see, that was easy because I'm in the dentist chair. She was talking about, it came up naturally because she was saying, like, how the doctor, oh, this is funny for listeners. I think I talked on the last one about how when I went to the last one, they were talking about Secret Santa and trying to guess who their Secret Santas were. And the doctor was like, I got my person something, but now I'm not sure if it was a good gift. And so this lady is waiting with me for the doctor, and she started talking about, I think she asked what I did, and I was like, I'm a librarian. And she's like, oh, she's like, I got books for my Secret Santa, but I don't really read. And I was like, oh, yeah. And she's like, yeah, I mean, I read, but I'm in school. So I read whatever. And I was like, oh, I totally get that. Like, when I was in library school, I didn't read. This is like a hilarious part of library school, is like, unless you're taking a literature class, you don't read a lot outside of school. Like, one of the things I was most looking forward to in finishing library school was reading. I do think library school, a lot of people will take that as an opportunity to, like, to read shit and whatever. And I think that's a good thing, sort of. But a lot of people will do, like, oh, I'm really into teen literature, so I'm going to take a teen literature course. And I read these, like, 15 books for teenagers or whatever. And I'm like, I mean, wouldn't you have done that anyway? Like, what's the point of that? But I don't know. I didn't really take a lot of literature classes in library school because, A, I took a lot in undergrad, and B, I felt like that was something I could do on my own. Like, read and think about books didn't seem like a good use of time and money to me. But whatever. We're getting off track. I think it's funny because, like, when people find out you're a librarian, they kind of often will sheepishly tell you that they don't read. And I think they think that I'm going to have a feeling about that. And I don't really care. Like, I wish people read more. I do wish more people were readers. But I don't have the sort of judgment part about it. Like, I think it's a good way to spend time, and I think it's, like, enriching, but I'm not so into that as maybe some other folks where I'm like, can you believe this fucker read one book last year? And I'm like, eh. I mean, yes. I don't know. People are busy. People have a lot of other things they're doing. And, whatever. It happens. I don't know. Anyway, so she's telling me she didn't really read. And then she's like, and then I found out that Dr. Lee was my secret Santa, and she got me, like, books. And so, you know, she's like, oh, God. Because they'd had a conversation about how she didn't really read much, and the doctor was like, oh, really? You know, and kind of like, whatever. And so then she's like, and I figured out why we had that conversation. Ugh. See, we're going around this curve, and this truck, there's a truck coming around going the other way, twice as long, carrying like a bulldozer. Got around just fine inside the lane. And this one, which is like a half-length semi, is like, oh, I'm going to just wait and go around so I can cut the corner. And you're like, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. This guy better be carrying a bomb or something. So anyway, full circle. Full circle, we got around to books. So, you know, we started talking about books, and then she was saying she didn't read because she's in school. And so then I started asking her about school, like how that is and whatever. And so she starts telling me about working there and working in the lab. She said the procedure, she's like, the procedure you have, I think, is one of the most interesting ones. It's like one of the ones I like helping with the most. I don't know why. She said, she's like, it does involve a lot of blood, though. I'm not squeamish at all. She's like, it was when I first came here, I was kind of shadowing, you know, as kind of an interview, I guess. They have you shadow and, like, watch what's going on. And she was like, you know, Dr. Lee was like, well, why don't you assist me, you know, basically hand me shit on this one and we'll see how you do. And I think this is the doctor's sort of clever way of weeding out people who shouldn't work there. Because she's like, the doctor kept looking up at me and being like, are you okay? Are you right? Like, and she's like, yeah, I'm fine. And she's like, okay, we've had people pass out doing this a lot, you know, which I was like, this is all very comforting. There's a lot of blood. I mean, the mouth bleeds a lot, is what I've learned. And once the mouth starts bleeding, it takes a little bit of work to stop it. But, you know, whatever. Whatever. I'm very stressed out, too, because I can't. I think my retainer is kind of rubbing up against the area where I've had the implant thing. And so I haven't been wearing it regularly. Because my retainer, my new retainer is very hard to get out. And so when it comes out, it's a little bit more violent than I would like. So when I pull it out, I think it's like hitting against the thing and it kind of hurts. And I'm like, ah, shit. So I'm going to not wear it for a couple days. But then I'm like, but then it's going to be really hard to get out. You know what I mean? There's just a lot of, it's a lot of drama. It's just, you know, the mouth is really, the teeth are a set of dominoes, man. You fuck with one of them, and then all the rest fall down like dominoes. They're like dominoes in that they're like dominoes. They're like dominoes, and they fall like dominoes. I'll say this, painkillers, they're all right. I think if I was on, like, I don't think the ones I have, it's like Tylenol with codeine, and I don't think they're super powerful. Like, they're not a high dosage. And they're, like, I think the lowest available dosage or whatever, and I take one every 5 hours or something. And, I think that the effects, well, they make me constipated a little bit. But that's not so bad. And then, you know, I guess I'm sort of used to dealing with bowel issues, so I'm like, well, that's not really a huge effect on my life. And then, I do get, like, a little irritable, I think. I'm sort of nervous about that for workshop, because I'm like, maybe I should just not say anything, because I do get a little irritable. And, like, I could tell at work yesterday, because I was working with this lady, and here's an annoying part of my job. Or a part of my job that you have to get very used to. People will start telling you what their problem is, and halfway through them explaining their problem, you know what's happening. Like, you as the person they're asking for help know what's happening. But they're so invested in continuing to explain the problem to you, like, they're not ready to listen to your solution yet until they've completely explained everything to you and explained their theories on what's happening and explained why this should not be happening. So what she was doing was she was trying to go to this website, right? She's like, I type in the web address, and I'm going to use my terms. She didn't use these terms. She's an internet novice, okay? And she's like, I type in the web address, and it goes to this site, but it's not the site I want. It's like all in Chinese. It just, it's something weird. I don't understand what it is. I don't know if I got a virus or something. I don't know if this website downloaded something. I don't even use email. You know, I just use my computer to go online and look at stuff. So I can't have a virus because I don't have email. And my kids said I should get email. And, you know, you're like, okay. And she's telling me, and, you know, I'm looking at her screen and she's like, see, this thing comes up and it's not the website I want. This isn't the right organization. This is some company. And the website was like orphantraindepot.com, right? And what came up was this like website, and it's like, you know, it looks like a legit business. It's like a digital media thing. And she's like, Orphan Train is this thing, and it was, you know, my family is from Chicago and they put these orphans on the train and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, we got past the point of you telling me things I need to know to help you with your problem so long ago. You know what I mean? And she kept going, and it's kind of difficult without being rude, but I had to do it. I had to be like, okay, I think I understand your problem, so let's go through some steps and see if we can fix this, you know, or make this work. And she still wasn't done, and she kind of insisted on, like, telling me more, and I was just like, I could feel, this is why I felt like I was irritable, and it may not have been the pills. It may have been, you know, I've been working a lot. I haven't had a lot of downtime. I haven't had a lot of Peter time, as Poon Master Flex puts it. So I think I haven't quite had as much sort of recharge the battery ability as I normally have. And I think that's a big part of it. You know, I haven't been able to sleep as much. I haven't been able to sort of, I haven't had this coming a week from yesterday, I will have my one day in the month of February where I'm not traveling, not going to workshop, not at work, and I'm at home. Like, there's one day out of the month that operates that way. So that's pretty exciting. But it's also kind of pathetic because you're like, Jesus Christ, like, you have no life, right? So anyway, she's telling me this. I'm getting frustrated because I'm just like, I know what's happening. I know exactly what's happening. She's probably got the wrong URL. You know what I mean? And so I'm like, all right, here's like part of what I think people don't understand about my job is like people are very novice at computers. And the thing is they ask you questions, but then they don't listen to you. They don't like sort of, okay, here's going to be some of my advice. If you ask a question on something like technology and you're out of your depth or something like that, once you ask the question and once the person is like, okay, let's try this, I recommend to a small extent surrendering yourself to the process, by which I mean just kind of listen and do what they say. You know what I mean? And I understand the question. I wouldn't be trying to do something. If I don't understand the question, I'll ask you more. I'll ask you to tell me more. So I'm like, okay, I think what's happening is you're typing in these URLs, these web addresses, and that's not the address. And she's like, no, you don't understand. Like, this Orphan Train Depot, this is like a thing that's hundreds of years old. Like, there's no way this other thing could be called that when this could. And I was like, well, and I made the mistake of trying to sort of explain, you know, URL buying and commerce, and was like, so here's the thing. I can buy any address I want. Like, if I decided to buy McDonald's.com before McDonald's did, I would own that. And there's nothing they can do about that. So if this company, Orphan Train Depot, bought the website before the thing you're looking for, they can completely own it, and, you know, it can be totally unrelated. It doesn't really matter what came first. You know, it's not, URLs aren't like, it's not like if I wrote a novel and then someone published the exact same novel and I could prove I wrote it first, that there'd be a copyright violation. It's just sort of a thing. You know what I mean? So, and she didn't really get that. And I was like, well, let me show you what I mean. And I was like, let's click at the top. And this is like where it gets tedious, right? There's a certain thing in my writing sometimes where things are like very particular to the point of almost tedium. And I'm starting to wonder if it comes from work, because I'm very used to explaining things to people on such a direct, micro, clear level that can't be screwed up. You know, and what I have to say is, okay, I want you to click once here in the address bar. Just click one time here in the address bar where we've got this www. And so she clicks. And like most people, when they do this, will click more than once. You know what I mean? They'll double click, or they'll click and then it highlights, and then they'll just click again. And I'm like, God damn it. Because now you have to backspace and delete the whole thing rather than whatever. And I'm like, but you know, this lady did it. She clicked once and highlighted the whole thing. And then I was like, okay, and the next thing we're going to do is we're just going to start typing. And she's like, I don't need to delete this stuff first. And I was like, no, you can just start typing and all of that's going to delete because it's highlighted. And she's like, but I don't have to like hit backspace first. And I'm like, this is where I start to get, you know, okay, will you just try what I'm asking you? Like, I'm not going to run away right now. I'm going to be here, so whatever. And I'm like, no, just go ahead and start typing. And let's try it. Type in Orphan Train Depot. And I was like, but no www, no .com. And so she starts typing it in, and it populates below. You know, it's like www. And she's like, see, it automatically goes in. And I was like, it's going to suggest that, but what we're going to do is type it in, and we're not going to add the .com. We're not going to put that in, because I was like, what we're going to do is just search for this rather than go directly to the address. And she's like giving me the, okay, crazy, you know what I mean? Okay, kooky. And I can feel like the irritation creeping into my voice now. Like, I think I'm still a little on edge with the whatever medications and lack of time away. So she types it in, and then, you know, it's a Google search, and it comes up immediately. And what she wanted was orphantraindepot.org. And so then I was like, okay, see, this is what I'm talking about. Like, I know that what you're trying to go to is Orphan Train Depot, but, you know, this company owns .com, and this thing you're looking for owns .org. So if you want to go straight to it, you can do orphantraindepot.org. But I recommend just putting in Orphan Train Depot and then finding what you're looking for from the search results. And she's like, okay. And then she's like, yes, this is what I'm looking for, and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, all right, cool. And she's like, I have another question. And it was the exact same question, just with a different website. You know, she's like, I'm looking for roseberryguitars.com. And when I type that in, something, the wrong thing comes up. You know, and I was like, well, let's try the same thing, you know. And I had to go, we had to do the same thing again. Click once, start typing, and let's just type roseberryguitars, no.com. And so then it comes up, and it's like, you know, scotttrainerguitars.com. And I was like, see, this is the thing, is his company might be called Roseberry Guitars, but, you know, he bought this website, which is scotttrainerguitars.com. And so, like, his company can be called roseberryguitars.com, but that was probably already taken or something like that. Like, a remarkable number of websites are already taken. You know, I'll even use the example from time to time of, like, hey, my name is Peter Dirk. PeterDirk.com was taken. I don't know who had it. I don't know why they had it. There was nothing going on there, but I could not have it. even though that's my name, even though like I could have done something with it, if someone else buys it, you can't have it. You know, one person can have it at a time. So anyway, I was just helping this lady and she just gave me so much detail about her question that was so unnecessary that I was starting to be, it was kind of like, you know, when someone's telling you a story, I was feeling like this. Someone was telling me a story the other day. I can't really remember, but you know, it's just more part and parcel of feeling a little irritated by things because I'm just like, someone was telling me a story and I was like, I feel like this is all extra detail and wish they would just get to the story. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like this is not necessary to the story. I don't think I'm getting anything out of this. It was kind of like, it made me wonder. I was like, I'm going to have to wait till I'm more clear-headed, obviously. But, like, it made me wonder as far as writing and stuff. Like, maybe there's a lot of value to not telling things in your story that don't need to be there. You know what I mean? Like, maybe this is kind of it's a minimalist principle, right? But it's sort of like, maybe there's a lot to be said for omitting anything that absolutely doesn't need to be there. You know what I mean? Or figuring out ways to tell your story that don't involve telling everything that happened. Because it's like, you know, everyone has like a relative who tells a story like this, right? So I'm at work. And my desk is this way, and so-and-so's desk is this way. And so when they're doing this, I can hear this and see this. And so then, you know, and she's from this part of the country, which, you know, she's got this different value system about this. And that, and you're like, I'm getting a lot of information right now, and I'm having a hard time knowing what of this information is absolutely necessary. You know what I mean? And you're like, I've been promised a pretty weird story here. So like, but I want to get to the weird part. It's almost like I want to get to the weird part first. It's a, people will talk about, you know, Tarantino-ing a story, right? Where you kind of tell the end and then go back and tell everything else. And I think people do get annoyed about that sometimes. And I understand why, but I think the value of the Tarantino-ing a story can sometimes be like, all right, you're promising me this crazy story. You're promising me this crazy story, right? And that's great, and I'm here for that. But like, when you Tarantino it, I know it's going to get somewhere. That I know the payoff is coming. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know if I hang in there, I'm gonna get a payoff. If I can just sort of stick with it, I'm going to get the payoff that I'm looking for. And I know it's coming because I've seen it already. I've seen that the payoff exists. I've seen that it's kind of laid into the story. So I'm not worried about like, all right, am I investing the effort of listening to all of this for, you know, no real reason? Like, am I making a mistake in listening to this? Am I using my time poorly? You know what I'm saying? It all makes sense when you get down to it. So anyway, I don't know. I lost the thread here. I feel like I was doing so good and then I lost the thread. This always happens though, because when I get to the parking lot here, I kind of, you know, I'm like head on a swivel trying to figure out where I'm going to park. And so then I lose the narrative of the podcast a little bit. I should probably just like, when I get my ticket and go into the lot, I should just be like, okay, that's the end. Because that really is the end, isn't it? Do you feel like that as a listener? You're like, okay, when I hear that thing about take ticket, da 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 da. I also talked to someone this week who sounded exactly like that machine. And she was just speaking normally, but her voice was very robotic. It was very odd. It was just, you know, it was very noticeable. I've never spoken to someone who spoke in such a sort of like robotic style naturally. You know what I mean? Like, you don't necessarily hear that a lot. So it was strange. You know what I mean? to say the least. You know, this is always like, oh, park in this, these rows are open. And you're like, are they? How great would it be if you came into these airport parking lots and it was like, the ticket told you, like, go to spot, da-da-da-da. Ugh. You know, there is a parking space that's open and it's like oversized vehicle parking only. Ugh, God. And then there's a car that's parked. You know, when you park at the airport, you're going to be there for like 3 days and parking is like kind of at a premium, right? It's limited. Make the effort and do a good job, for God's sake. You're not going in the store for 2 minutes. All right. See you next time.